Fred Film Radio, Berlin International Film Festival, Germany.
Fred P Radio, this is Chiara Nicoletti from the 64th Berlin International Film Festival, and I'm with Michel Gondry, director of the animated documentary screening in Panorama, Is the Man Who Is Tall Happy?, which is an animated conversation with Noah Chomsky. So my first question would be, while I was watching the film, I thought, am I engaging everything Chomsky is saying, or am I being absorbed into the world of Michel Gondry?
Well, it's interesting because I made two documentaries before, and the second one, and I had met this filmmaker called Doug Block, who made this great film called 51 Birch Street. And it was a family documentary with something really dramatic. His mom passed away while he was shooting, and then he found that she had written a journal all her life, and he realized that his family was absolutely not, the couple of his parents' couple was absolutely not what he believed. So this guy, I was really impressed by his world and his work. And one time we met, and I said, I think something is not catching with my film. And he said, you should introduce the documentary and use your voice as both the voice as the image and the voice really, the sound of your voice, to introduce your work and keep in touch with the audience. So I listened to him, and after that I used more my voice in the documentary.
Doesn't the whole interrogation, the whole animated conversation show like your own interpretation of Ochowski theories?
It's always subjective. What I'm saying is that in the introduction, it's like I'm not saying there is no manipulation, but it's more obvious that it's an artistic interpretation of his message or his science or his discourse. Of course, you could think it's a manipulation if you think I play more stupid than I am, or I play smart, or I act as I was if I was shy, and I was not shy. I think I was the way I was. I had problems to understand, problems to communicate, and I felt shy, and sometimes I felt that I wanted to get my point through, so I was more aggressive. So I feel that I am honest, but now you can only trust me.
When you first approached Noam Chomsky, did you already tell him that you wanted to do an animated documentary on him, or you just told him that you wanted to do a documentary?
No, I didn't say anything to him about it was just meeting him, because I was visiting MIT and I was meeting with a lot of teachers and students, and I wanted to sort of get enriched and I get in contact with all these people. And I realized he was there, and of course he's this very prominent figure, and all his activism and his views on creativity and democracy was really interesting me, and I had some concept for the world that I wanted to share with him, but he was not very receptive, I have to be honest. he sort of dismissed them, because he lived way longer and he has a very large view of the world, so some of my concepts were a bit naive. And later on, after maybe a year or two, I suggested to do a documentary. But and the idea of animation was even before. I always had this idea. I wanted to do an animated documentary.
Which of his ideas and theories do you also support? Do you have common views on subjects?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have his knowledge and his academics and his on his articulation, of course. And all his facts are really checked. He checks his source. He works with the same scientific brain, which is never believe what people say to you or what's usually believed without checking yourself if it's true, if it's the truth that corresponds that you can accept. And of course, I'm not to this level, but I share his views. And as well, I have to be honest and say that I'm maybe influenced. He's like a great thinker, and the great thinker can have an influence on me, and maybe there will be there are areas where I have disagreement with him, but it's one of the person that I really believe, and I really find that his work is very important can help the world and at least open people's eyes. But there is other people like this sociologist, French sociologist that was called Pierre Bourdieu, who studied very in detail poverty in France and how rich people make sure their descendants keep the same power by giving them the code to talk, like, more or less consciously. And so all that talked to me, and I made my own opinion from glimpse of all this exposition.
How come you didn't do more with this political activism and thinking?
Because it was done in a very strong way. And I'm not saying I'm more interested in scientific work. I felt maybe I could sort of humanize him in a way that people would be... Because sometimes people think he's just this cold man who has a lot of knowledge and he's not really in touch with reality. And that's not the case. And I felt maybe if I start from his scientific work and thinking, and I really was interested by that, then if I sort of succeed into opening people's mind to that, then they will be even more receptive to his views on how to change the world.
It's just that when he mentioned having been in jail, I would have liked to know more.
It's true, but it's like when I watch the documentary, I feel I could have, you know, pursue, and it's why I'm not maybe a professional journalist. There is few things that I wish I had pushed further and say why and how can you explain. And I think what happened is that he was that was during the Vietnam War, and he was rioting and he was, you know, doing march and protest, and I illustrated that. We see him marching and I took photos that existed, and then you see the cops taking him because he has been in and out of jail for those demonstrations. And as well, within the circle of the MIT university, he was one of the two teachers who spoke out. Mm-hmm. And I think it's how he started to be a sort of a hero for the student, because most of the teachers didn't want to speak on politics because they were concerned to lose the chair or the situation. And he was like... really outspoken.
In your shooting, how did you choose what to keep and what to leave out? And which idea was the most complex to develop and reproduce with the drawings?
Well, I recorded 3 hours and I used half of it. So it's a big portion. And it was a very organic process. I mean, I was very impatient to start to animate and see if the process would work, if this abstract animation, because that's where I started, would sort of work with his voice. And so I had animated certain parts, so I had to include them in the final editing, because I was not to animate part that I would cut out, although I did few, but very little, because it's so much work already. So I had to use those parts, but then I started to organize them with my editor into a continuity and organize the order of subject to feel like a full movie. And then when it was done, I knew that I had to animate this and this. And I think one of the most complex things I had to work on, and it was hard for me to understand, is this relationship we have between our mind and the outside world. And I argued, but I was not disagreeing with him. That was frustrating, because I was just I had observed that what it is in the film, I'm not going to repeat it, but basically it's just it was funny that you see stuff by representation before you see them for in the flesh. But I think he understood it. Somehow he must have resembled what people in linguistic think it works, but I have no idea what those people say, to be honest. I know that's one of the things that I still try to grasp. It's what he calls the referential assumption, that the fact that we just identify something, and a table is a table because it's flat and it has 4 legs, and that's all. We don't find all the tables like that, or a chair, and his view is completely different. But see, I'm sure somebody who believes that would say, oh, but it's not at all like that, so I feel a little bit incomplete.
Well, actually, I thought that a lot of things Chomsky is explaining don't immediately suggest images. How did you work on those?
Well, it depends, because sometimes it talks about a tree. So it's not take, it doesn't take hard science. I'm just going to do a tree. But then it drifts into another image. So I'm going to try to imagine how the tree can lead to a stone or whatever the next image is. So in this process, with the tree, I get really on the surface. But then when I try to find a transition from the tree into like a question mark, then I have to create something that's it's more out of the usual. A lot of the work was that. So I illustrate what comes to me first in my mind, and then I imagine how I can make a continuity out of that.
Mm-hmm. Are you a very patient person? Because I think it was like it takes a lot of hours to draw whole documentary.
Well, I think I am patient when I like something to do something, but when I don't like, I'm rather impatient. But I like animation seems to be a long process, but even if you spend 3 hours or 4 hours to do 1 second, when you see this second animated, it's rewarding enough so you don't feel you wasted time.
So drawing is an old passion.
Yeah, I mean, for instance, I was doing a lot of photo when I was adolescent or pre-adolescent. I was taking the picture, I was processing the negative, and then I would spend all days in my little lab, and I couldn't see, I didn't feel the hour passing. I was just totally engrossed into it. So I guess I have some patience where I get taken, and I think that sort of brings back to this philosophy he had, or his politics about everybody should be doing something that they like or something creative, so they don't suffer from the unpleasant work, because I have done unpleasant work like putting books in a box, and I couldn't stop watching the clock, and the day seemed to be going forever, lasting forever. So I guess everybody is impatient when they get to do something they don't like.
Did Chosky see the documentary?
Yes.
What did he think about it?
It was very appreciative. He liked the patience I had, actually, and the craft and the sensibility and the inquiry.
Were you anxious to hear his opinion?
Yeah, when he was my first and most important audience. So, of course, and it's like a father-son relationship, maybe, when you need the approval, you know, of your father, I can't hide it. And the fact that he's this person, and I mean, even if I do a video for an artist, I'm very upset if the artist doesn't like the video. It happened, for instance, with Radiohead, when they hated the video, and I was really destroyed, because they were the after he changed his mind, Thom Yorke. But in each other, I was really heartbroken, because I put all my effort in doing something, and maybe it's a weakness, but I don't do it only for myself. I do it to please the person whom I'm representing. So it's the same with Amchowski, only it's even bigger because of his very critical mind.
In a part of the documentary, Chomsky says that all economical crises are programmed beforehand. What do you think about it?
Well, I think the general opinion is to just see the result of things and just comment or complain about it, like the European community and some people that say, well, we don't want to pay for their mistakes. And it's true that if you look at the root of the problem, you would see how it could have been avoided and how it could apply to other situations where it's going to lead to the same crisis, and how we could correct the problem before it happened. And it's interesting, like on a broader issue, like this World War II. And they had this sort of disagreement with Howard Zinn, who was his great friend, and they have a lot of common views on the history and the world and the activism. So Howard Zinn said that the Second World War II was like the implication on America going into Europe to help fixing the problem was one of the only justified war. And Chomsky disagreed on that, and he thinks it could have been solved before it happened and at least tried. And I think if I do another interview with him, I'd like to get him to tell me more about that, because I think it's not very much talk about. Fact that in America they didn't care about the uprising of Nazi, all this movement, and they could have interfered way before they got all those millions of people killed. So I think he always see very deeply the problem, and I would feel very incompetent to comment on those things, because I don't have much knowledge, and I have a terrible memory. So if I have a strong opinion on things, but people, and you need to back up your opinion, and then to back up your opinion, you need to have facts. But that's where it hurts because I can't remember the facts very well.
If you could do like another animated documentary and another animated conversation, who would you do it with?
Maybe another scientist, like an astrophysician. I know one that's great, but I can't say his name because it's Vietnamese. It's Truong Trinh Truong. You have to do... He did this book called The Secret Melody. It's beautiful. And well, I met Quincy Jones, for instance. I had the opportunity to meet him when I was preparing Beacon and Wine. So it would be a great person to do a movie. He went from jazz to pop music, and he covered half a century. He was genius, and so artists like that, but they keep dying. So it's my fear. It takes like 50 years for somebody to reach this level, and then they die in 5 minutes and or more. If they are not so lucky, but. It's scary, but like working with Björk or some people like that have this level of intellect and creativity, already I feel privileged. Or even doing a documentary with Dave Chappelle was on all those bands was great. So I have no frustration about that. I feel I accomplished. I mean, I got the luck to meet a lot of great people, but I would. There's certainly a lot of people I would like to interview, but mostly they are dead.
Do you have a new interest in documentary now?
Yeah, I mean, I like watching them sometimes more than feature film. Because even if they don't feel... what I don't like them is when they are too entertaining and you feel manipulated. There is great documentaries that are really successful, which I would not say the name, but they are feel really manipulative, and they really change facts and change editing in a way you really get surprised, and they're very popular. But those I really don't like. But like for instance, The Staircase. I don't know if you've seen this one about this murder case. And the guy who found his wife dead down the stairs, he was accused of her murder. It was like 6 hours, and I watched them all at once. So I like these things because I like to watch them. And as well, I feel a duty, and it's always, again, it's about death. Like my auntie, she's the same age as Noam Chomsky, and she told all her life with very small school in very rural, in the mountain, very removed villages. And she has a million stories to say. So I always felt I want to record her stories so I can preserve them. And my grandfather was an inventor, and I missed him. I didn't record his voice or did nothing with him, and I should have.
So the final question is inevitable. What makes you happy?
Oh, yeah, so I was asked this question. You know, it's funny, because when I was asked this question, I reacted like him. And I think that's why you feel he's solitary and he feels a little sad. It's because cross-blank, this question, and if you talk about subjects that are really related to your work, and then suddenly you have been asked a question that's so personal, and then you're not ready to answer, it feels that you have nothing that makes you happy, which it seems to be his case. But then after, it takes time, but then after he finds a lot of example of things that makes him happy. And what about myself, I mean, there is a lot of things that I did with my son, like going to see movies and going to countryside, that I just thinking of them, it makes me really happy, meeting people, not doing interviews.
You're making people mad.
No, but there is things I'm not necessarily very happy all the time, and I have a lot of anguish and wondering. But let's say when I do creative work, I'm very happy. Like when I went to see animation, because the animation process is very abstract, and you have no idea how it's going to look when it's going to be put together, and then you see it come on the screen and it moves, that makes me happy. I mean, it seems like I have no other life than that, but I mean, since I was a kid, I always made things with my hands, so it seems that it's logical that it's going to make me happy.
Thank you so much, Michel Gondry, for being on Freffy Radio with us.
Thank you.
And this is Chiara Nicoletti from the 64th Berlin International Film Festival for Fred, the festival insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.